is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to the weekend news magazine, Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud here. Well, a lot of big stories we're following all around the world, actually. Afghanistan, Israel, COVID, what's happening in China. Big program today. How much will fit in? Well, we're about to find out exactly. I'd like to start right up front here with Afghanistan. And let's talk about this a little bit here. The Afghanistan conflict started in October 2001. Now, you remember this was just after September 11th, was a big deal. The goal initially, supposedly, was to remove the Taliban. And there was talk about them, of course, Hopper and Osama bin Laden, remember, and they were worried about the Al-Qaeda links. And let me give you a few numbers here to put this in context, okay? So last year, about 4,000 U.S. troops had shrunk to about 2,500 by January of this year, okay? But the numbers that, don't forget also, there's private security contractors and, you know, citizens, U.S. citizens there. And that number was almost 8,000, according to Congress, just about. According to the U.S. Department of Defense, the total military expenditure in Afghanistan from October 2001 right up to current here, I mean, we're approaching about $1 trillion. It's coming close now. I mean, there's a lot of scattered numbers, but when you add it all up, that's really what we're looking at. That doesn't include dollars spent in Pakistan and other things that are Afghan-related as well. Those are additional dollars. Since this war began in 2001, we've suffered more than 2,300 deaths and around 20,600 plus soldiers injured in action. That's from the beginning now to present day. So you can see the human sacrifice and life of that is serious, of course. Brown University's research here about a year ago estimated the loss of life amongst the national military and police in Afghanistan as well to be more than 64,000 since October 2001 when the war began. So a lot of questions here about Afghanistan. Is this the right time to pull out? Or should we have ever been there in the first place to begin with? I mean, there's a lot of opinions, a lot of thoughts, and a lot of facts here. Let's start at the top of the program with Del Wilbur joins me. Del is a former CIA and Department of Defense Intelligence and Counterterrorism officer, serving overseas in Eastern and Western Europe and the Middle East. It's been a while, Del, and it's good to have you on the program. And so let's talk about the policy in Afghanistan to begin with. Looking back, I mean, Afghanistan is a tribal nation. We've come through both Republican and Democrat administrations in Washington. There's always been a lot of talk about pulling out of there. But looking back, was going into Afghanistan the right move for the United States almost 20 years ago?
Well, first of all, it's good to be back. And thanks for having me as part of this conversation, because I certainly have some I guess some strong feelings about it. But the short answer is, yes, we had to go in. And the longer answer is we actually won the war back in 2001. And we decided to stay around and try to do some nation building, which we really suck at. And, you know, we tried it in Iraq and in Afghanistan, and we just don't do a very good job of it. And we should have, in my personal opinion, once we chased the Taliban out and the remnants of Al-Qaeda out, we basically should have picked the least detestable warlord in Afghanistan, installed him as the leader with instructions that should he anger us too much and should he mistreat his people too badly, then we would come in the dark of night and kill him and then replace him with another warlord who we hope is less detestable. And we would give that warlord the same instructions. So that would have, you know, stopped this exercise in futility that we've been dealing with now for the last 20 years. And unfortunately, that wasn't done. And so now we find ourselves basically thrown away. We've squandered lives, we've squandered treasure, and you know, it's just a repeat of what we've seen in other parts of the world, that we've come and we've conquered, and then we've left with our tail between our legs.
Yeah. Let me read you this here. There was an Afghan soldier that was quoted as saying, "In one night, they lost all the goodwill of 20 years by leaving the way they did in the night without telling the Afghan soldiers who were outside patrolling the area." There's been a lot of criticism about the way they left already, Bagram Air Force Base there. You have any insight to that, some of the complaints coming forward with that?
Well, I mean, I guess you have to put yourself in the position of the Afghans who were reliant upon our help and trying to help protect their country and defend it against the Taliban, and for us to just pack up and leave in the middle of the night. I mean, that not only sends the wrong message and a very bad image to the Afghan people and the Afghan military who were our partners, but what kind of a message does that send to the rest of the world and to our other adversaries in the world? You know, it sends a message that, you know, Americans don't have the will to stick it out. And this administration is, in fairness, Trump had said the same thing, that he was going to stop these endless wars.
Right.
But, you know, there's a difference between endless wars and endless occupation. We've been in Japan and Korea and Germany for decades and decades, well beyond what our time in Afghanistan has been. And we've been there for the purpose of deterrence. And I think that probably is something that was merited in Afghanistan. Afghanistan was a base of operations for many of our adversaries that are in that part of the world. And, you know, we've just given it up, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How concerned are we, Dale, that about all the experts and reports are saying that that culture there, which is unfixable, will come roaring back immediately, which kind of plays to your point of the warlords and what you were talking about up front. This has become a breeding ground for all kinds of things. And that's what a lot of administrations has used as keep our troops out there. That was the basis they used, was to say that they would rebuild that area. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that's exactly what's going to happen. I think the Taliban's going to come steamrolling in. Mm-hmm. And the Afghan military and police are probably going to desert en masse, just as some of them have already done. And I believe it's crossed into over 1,000 or more have crossed into Tajikistan already, and basically just, you know, dropped their weapons and ran. And I think that's going to happen. I don't think, you look back in history. I mean, we had a similar occurrence that we should have learned from. And that was back in Vietnam, when, you know, the South Vietnamese military just basically collapsed from the onslaught of the North Vietnamese. And, you know, so we're seeing a repeat of history. I mean, hopefully we don't see helicopters landing on the roof of the U.S. Embassy in Kabul, but I don't think that's far from a possibility.
Yeah. Yes. I'm glad you brought up Vietnam. Actually, I've seen a lot of reports that people are comparing or trying to compare and contrast this to Vietnam. Of course, it's a whole different animal, but the context you just laid out is fascinating to get you to think of that. The way you've positioned this so far is, I think, excellent for listeners to get a hold of what's really happening. The story I want to kind of pull into right now, Dale, stay right there. I want to bring someone else on the program here, and who's got an article up about this, actually, and that is our very own Ilana Friedman. Ilana's a veteran intelligence analyst and an advisor in intelligence-led counterterrorism solutions. She trained in Israel. She lived and worked there for 16 years. She's author of many articles and books on the topic of terrorism around the world. And Ilana, welcome here again to Viewpoint this Sunday. And let me ask you, you have a fantastic article up on this on the front of AmericaOutloud.com. And you don't mix your words. I mean, you put it right out there, as it says here, an American betrayal at a Bagram Air Force base in Afghanistan. And let me just say this opening line, and then I'll let you take it and explain to folks where you're at and what's in your heart about this, and we'll have Del respond to that. Deep in the dark night of July 2nd, 2021, America betrayed the only friends we had in Afghanistan. President Joe Biden ordered the withdrawal of our last troops from Bagram Air Force Base by stealth, like thieves in the night, leaving behind the Afghan guides, translators, guards, and other local staff who made our limited successes in Afghanistan possible. We betrayed those Afghanis who put their own lives at risk and the lives of their families. They risked their lives every day in order to assist and protect our troops, and then we refused to secure their safety when we left. Instead, we abandoned them to the cruel injustice at the brutal Taliban, who see them as nothing more than traitors and will treat them accordingly. Now, strong words, Alana, but that plays to what Del was just saying, where they're already leaving and going across the border here. I mean, it's exactly what Del is talking about when he says they're leaving and going across the border. Kid, pick up from there and tell us what's your greatest fear here with this is.
I think what we did was shameful. And then the president got on national television and said that, you know, these brave people are welcome here. But the Afghanis themselves are saying those are just words. He's not doing anything. They're still in Afghanistan. And they're facing now the Taliban, who's going to come, who consider them traitors and is going to come after them and torture and kill them, murder their families, because to the Taliban, they're not heroes, they're traitors. And these people are afraid for their lives. They're defecting, they're turning over their weapons to the Taliban and throwing them at the, you know, throwing them at the feet of the Taliban and asking for mercy. And they're going across the border to neighboring countries. They're not going to be there to fight for whatever it is we thought was worth fighting for. I think our presence as a deterrent is, there's a good argument to be made for that, but not to try to nation build and make a democratic society out of what is essentially a tribal non-country. These are, you know, pockets of tribalism all over what we call Afghanistan, but what they call their own tribal units. They don't see it as a nation. And yeah, we have been imposing that on them, as the Western world has been doing for a long time. This is not the reality. And so when we snuck out in the middle of the night, mm-hmm, we really did betray the people who have helped us stay there and stay alive. And now we have thrown them at, mm-hmm, on the mercy of the, yeah, Taliban, who have no mercy.
All right. So it sounds like from both of you, you both feel we've botched this whole arrangement. Now, Trump was talking exactly the same plan to get us out of Afghanistan. I wonder, Ilana, do you think he would have done it any differently than what Biden just did?
You know, I've been wondering about that. I don't think he would have snuck our troops out in the middle of the night in secrecy and abandoned. I don't think he would have done. You know, there's an old expression that says you have to meet your enemy from a position of strength. You have to deal with them from a position of strength. And mm-hmm, Trump got that. Biden doesn't get it, or whoever is running the show down there. And if we do what we did, then it just shows that we're weak and toothless and clawless and very easily, overcome. And by the way, the Taliban now claim that they have taken over most of Afghanistan again.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yeah. Well, as you say, we've seen this picture before. It's a replay of a lot of things. And Del, to your point earlier, it seems like we never learn from history, especially when it comes to the bureaucracy of Washington, D.C., and whatever their spirit moves them at the moment with. Two points here, Del, I want to ask you here. The first being, same question to you. Would Trump have done anything differently at this point, or would it have been the same thing Biden did, you think?
You know, I don't think that we would have left in the dark of the night, with our tail tucked between our legs. I think we probably would still have departed, because Trump was pretty vocal about that.
Yeah.
He wanted to bring our military home from these never-ending wars. But Trump also was a realist, and he understood that perhaps, you know, there was a legitimate reason to maintain some kind of a capability mm-hmm. or presence. I know for a fact that there had been discussions between President Trump and Eric Prince about perhaps establishing some sort of a contract force in Afghanistan. I obviously those discussions didn't materialize into anything, you know, real. But we're, you know, the bottom line, what concerns me more than anything is I want to know where all of the feminists are in Washington, D.C., because the women and girls of Afghanistan have just been given over to the Taliban. And the response is going to be brutal.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a human factor here that a lot of people don't get, and they sort of throw their hands up and to the wind and say, well, it's not our problem. But you bring up a really seriously valid point, Dell, because I've seen tons of reports in my research on exactly what you say right there, which, again, historically goes to what has happened previously. So back to what everybody has said, all the progress that's been made over the last 20 years is out the window, and we shouldn't have been there 20 years to begin with, you point out, Dell. We should have done what we needed to do and got the hell out back, you know, 18 and a half years ago, and that never happened, which you laid out a compelling case of how we've done that around the world time and again. Let me now spend a couple minutes with you, Dale, on counterterrorism, the strategy for Afghanistan moving forward. So as early as this week, the top U.S. commander in the Middle East, General Frank McKenzie, gave our defense secretary, Lloyd Austin, a range of the military options for securing our embassy in Afghanistan and providing the counterterrorism support from outside the country once the withdrawal is complete, which is just about getting there. About they're saying or suggesting, Dell, about 650 U.S. troops are expected to stay in Afghanistan, roughly, approximately. Could be anywhere from a few hundred to 1,000, actually, but they're suggesting 650 here, maybe, is what the AP is reporting, to provide security for diplomats after the main withdrawal is completed. Is this the right strategy moving forward? Is this, is everybody on the right page here?
Well, I mean, I fully expect that we're going to withdraw our embassy in the future. I think it's going to become untenable once the Taliban takes over Kabul and returns to power. They have no reason to maintain diplomatic relations with us. So why would we even, you know, be concerned about maintaining our own diplomatic presence there, because all we're doing is giving them targets. And, you know, our embassy in Baghdad is routinely, you know, martyred or shot at. I mean, they have every time Iran gives the Mahdi army in Baghdad instructions to lob a few mortars at us, they do it. And I think the compound. I will be, you know, the first to admit I have not been to Afghanistan. My time was all in Iraq and other places, but I know that you can only fortify a place to the extent that you have control of the terrain around you, and we're not going to have any control of the terrain around us. It's simply going to become a situation where our embassy is no longer safe to maintain a presence at.
It's not a bright future, obviously, for Afghanistan, but it never was. And remember, we came in there back in 01, just after the Russians were there for how many years, Dale? They were there for a long time, right? The Russians.
Yeah, the Russians were there for I guess they went in during the Carter administration in 1980, right. And they left the same way we did. Which tells you something about the mm-hmm. problems with Afghanistan.
Yeah. One last thought on this story I wanted to share with you is one of the other reports I'm hearing now is that China is going to go in and swoop all this up. There's a lot of reports on that, actually. And also there's a lot of like the minerals, the rare earths, all of this, which is a lot of that in Afghanistan. They're talking about, you know, trying to claim ownership to that. Do you see China having a piece of this still?
Well, I think it's very possible, because China won't play by the same rules of engagement that we did. They're not concerned about human rights or about the Afghan people. They'll assert whatever control that they feel they need to in order to accomplish their goals there. So it's very possible, you know, they could have, and that was my point when I said about maintaining a presence there, because it could serve as a base of operations for, you know, some of our other adversaries that we may have to deal with in the future. And we've given that up now. So certainly the Chinese will try to exploit it. That's for sure.
Yeah, and that's what I'm hearing. Excellent analysis from Dale Wilbur and Ilana Friedman. Dale, let me tell folks as well about your book. I just realized you've got that great book I want to tell folks about. And you can get this in Amazon bookstores or right in the America Out Loud bookstore as well. It's entitled In the Shadow of the Swords, the Baghdad Police Academy. In fact, as you're listening to this on Sunday, and if you go to the homepage of AmericaOutLoud.com, you'll find that book and a link to that book right there to see about getting that from Dell, who tells a very compelling story about his background and his history out there in Baghdad. So I recommend that to you folks to do. Well, listen, let me take a pause here and mention to you all, the growth and the rocket ship has taken off back at AmericaOutLoud.com. Invite you all back there. I hope you've made it your daily source now, as millions of other Americans have, to get the truth and get real information out to the American people. We have a whole host of great writers, columnists, talk show hosts on radio and podcasts. It's all there back at AmericaOutLoud.com. One other thing to tell you about, the thing I'm always concerned with that I speak to you about, whether it's through the weekday program, The Voice of a Nation, or here on Viewpoint this Sunday, is your health. And that is Healthy Cell. They've been with us, about 4 years or so. I've been taking them pretty close to 4 years, well over 3.5 years, Healthy Cell. It comes in a gel pack now, so it's so easy to take. You hear a lot of folks on the network here talk about it. It's an incredible product. There's also what's called an immune super boost, which I love, love, love. This thing has got all the ingredients in there to fight any flu, any virus, any COVID, whatever it is. The echinacea, the zinc, all of the A, the D, everything is in there that you want to have. So check that out. All our listeners get 20% off your first order there. Just use the code OUTLOUD, healthycell.com/OUTLOUD, or just click the banner ad back at AmericaOutLoud.com. Okay, we got a lot of program ahead, a lot more coming on. Dr. Ling Mengyang will be joining us shortly there. Stay right there. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Viewpoint this Sunday.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Because of COVID-19, the average American worries about their immune health 4 times a day. That's 112 times per year. To minimize the worries, leading nutritional supplement company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost, an immune supplement that contains 15 full doses of science-backed nutrients like vitamin C, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea, all in a one-a-day pill-free gel pack. It tastes great, is convenient on the go, and it's more natural too, without chemical binders, fillers, and coatings. Supporting a strong and resilient immune system can be simple. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Immune Super Boost. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
AmericaOutLoud.com is the alternative from the agenda-driven globalist. Here, we take on the challenges of our generation so that we can preserve future generations. On-demand podcast or real-time talk radio with our streaming apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep can be infuriating. Your mind races. You toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's digital age makes it even harder. You're not alone with this struggle. Poor sleep affects over 70% of Americans. Even the Centers for Disease Control label insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. To take back your sleep, Healthy Cell has created REM Sleep, the only sleep supplement made to support all four stages of human sleep with calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support. Delivered in a patent-pending, pill-free, ultra-absorption microgel formula that tastes great. Fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deeply, and wake up refreshed with Healthy Cell's REM Sleep. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@AmericaOutLoud.com.
Welcome back to Viewpoint This Sunday. It is yours truly here, Malcolm Outloud, and we are talking about world-changing events today on Viewpoint. I think it's an important mission and a message we have today for the American people, discussing Afghanistan, discussing China and the CCP, Israel, things that are happening out in the Middle East. So there's a lot to pack in here, and I want to get started here next and bring on to the program. Dr. Lee Meng Young is here, and she's an independent virologist and whistleblower who is calling out the CCP to let everyone know the truth about COVID-19, but more so their plans around the world. She has accused Beijing of a massive cover-up with the release of coronavirus. And by the way, she backs it up with evidence. Her links to the three Yon reports she has are pinned on her social media, and the links to those will be in the post of this broadcast when it goes to podcast. So I encourage you to seek that out and read up and see the evidence of that. Also joining us back here on the program again is Ilana Friedman. And Ilana's a veteran intelligence analyst. She trained in Israel, as you know, worked there for many years, and is a columnist, writer, and a great voice here at America Out Loud. I want to start now first in talking about, when we discuss China, I want to specifically talk about the CCP and the buildup of the CCP. There was, in the last couple of days, there was some information that came in that was, I guess I would use the word eye-opening, shattering information about what China is really up to. You know, we talk a lot about the CCP and the evil that is come forth there, but it's more than just COVID. I mean, when you look around the world and their threats to Hong Kong and Taiwan, and you look at the building in the South China Seas, and you see what else they're doing as they flex their muscles around the globe, even in other areas of Africa and other places, they are doing exactly that. Ilana, I want to get it over to you to start with here. And I'd like you to bring forth here this damning information of we talked about the buildup of the CCP and how concerning this is that all Americans and more so our political officials need to pay attention to.
I'm very concerned that our country and particularly our government is not taking the threat of China and the CCP particularly seriously. President Xi took power about 8 years ago, I think, and he has, what he has done in a very short period of time is try to build out his dream for China being the global power. And he's talking about this as a 100-year goal. China, at the 100th anniversary of the revolution, he wants, and the revolution was in 1949. So in 2049, he wants China to be the global superpower. And this has been coming for a long time, but he is really determined, it seems, to make this happen. So he is building up at a very rapid rate the military forces of China in a way that has never been done before, so that it actually begins to pose a threat to America. Now, the intelligence that I received on July 10th indicates that the CCP is using the isolation and secrecy in Xinjiang province where they're building, the Xinjiang province is where they built the hundreds of concentration camps for Uyghurs. But now, in addition to that horror, they are also building 21 long-range missiles, each of which is capable of carrying 10 independent warheads, which means each one can strike a different target, and with a range capable of reaching any point in the United States. That was this first piece of intelligence. And the second one was that they are also reported to be building 26 medium-range missiles for use in Asia. And this brings us to the immediate goal of attacking and taking over Taiwan. But it also threatens Japan and South Korea, for example. Mm-hmm. He is preparing China for global dominance. Mm-hmm. And that's what we need to be very mindful of, and to build up our own barrier against what he is trying to accomplish.
Okay, let's talk about that now, with that global dominance here. Dr. Ling Mengyang, you more than anyone know the origins of what the CCP is capable of. Allow me to give you the floor now to speak about some of these reports that Ilana speaks about and what your thoughts are in your heart about that.
Oh, hi, Malcolm and Ilana. I think the intelligence Elena just mentioned is very important. And it just shows people that he and the CCP never gave up their ambition to overcome the world. And they never mind about human life. That's why they are building the weapons to threat all over the world. But I also want to mention is China. The technology is not as advanced as the Western country, especially America. So China government clearly understand there is a great absolute difference between their weapon power to Americans' weapon power. I mean, it doesn't mean they will give up using these weapons. What I want to tell people is, although they have these weapons, but if you only focus on these weapons, you will, let CCP win from the other side, because CCP know they are weak compared to America and Europe in this style. That's why they released the unrestricted bioweapon, the COVID-19 virus we have seen for over 1 year, to do the attack to your countries and undermine your economic and destroy your society in a more hidden way. This is very cunning, very bad, but because it's difficult to be recognized and it's difficult to be stopped, because, we are still lack of the laws and experience about this situation. So China is using this to achieve their goals more than those weapons you see on the list. So we should be aware of Chinese weapon power. At the same time, place know that the bioweapon is even worse threat than for the real weapons.
You bring up a valid point. China knows that tit for tat in a traditional military exercise, they would be on the losing side of that potentially. And of course, nobody really wins when you have a military exercise to the level of what we would see with superpowers going to war. This is a grave picture for the entire planet, quite frankly, and could put World War I and II to shame based on what would happen next. Having said all that, what you just say is very powerful, because listen, what the CCP is really after is using these, again, unrestricted bioweapons, using other means that are traditionally you wouldn't see in a war, even cyber sort of things that we've been reporting on consistently. That is really the wave of the future, is more in the weaponry they're going to be using. I think you would say, Dr. Ling Mengyang, is more so this sort of thing with the unrestricted bioweapons and cyber sort of effect. It's sort of a different sort of strategy coming off after America. And as Ilana says, a 100-year strategy by 2049, Xi wants China to be the global superpower. the problem is, here's what I want to ask you again. And if everybody's listening for the first time and has not heard Dr. Lehman Young before, I want to say this to you. I had asked you a question, a couple weeks back there or so, like, okay, so we know what's happened to the Wuhan lab, even though they don't admit anything, but how many other dangers are there in their labs and all around China in this area to build up in the biological area like this here? And what is your report back on that, Dr. Lehman Young?
Oh, Malcolm, frankly, I don't want to make our audience panic, but I'm the scientist. I'm working on virus in the top lab. So based on my experience and knowledge, I can tell you they already have such virus. They already have samples collected from no matter animals all over China, even all over the world. Also, the samples collected from numerous patients in China, and they can share it. The materials from other countries too. So China now has enough materials and they have experience to generate more variants or more this type of the unrestricted bioweapon in the labs. Mm-hmm. It doesn't need to be only in the Wuhan lab. And China never lack of money and manpower to do this because they enjoy this. They think it's very useful. Mm-hmm. So that means, let me tell you a number that back to last February, when I contacted my friends in mainland China, they told me that China government already gave many quota to different hospitals all over China to build BSL-3 biosafety lab for further study of virus. These people, they told me they would have like millions of money immediately come from government for the lab, but they even don't know how to handle the lab. So they want to learn the experience from my lab, the WHO lab. And then you see, China government already realized even back to February last year, this virus is so potential useful. So they want to expand their all this kind of situation to further study and even produce, amplify more virus. And this is not difficult. As I said in my report, based on the evidence, scientific evidence, and what they can do, just within half a year, this COVID-19 virus can be produced based on the backbone in people's liberation army's hand. And then after that, if you want to generate more variants, or if you want to add more function, or you want to do similar thing, the time can be shorter. And also, this protocol, when it is distributed to different labs, it's not difficult for people to generate some similar things. So what I want to tell people is, we really don't have much time because China will try its best to take advantage of such unrestricted bioweapon and make it more and more, if necessary, to attack other countries to achieve their goals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, what everybody has also seen is how we've handled this virus. See, that's all been exposed as well. The way we treated it here in the United States with all the lockdowns and the fear that was put out there that it continues to be ratcheted up here in our country with all kinds of things, vaccines, mask wearing, all kinds of controversies. As a segue to what you're talking about, Dr. Lehman Young, which, my golly, the warning you just put out is so important. And it just reminds me how blessed we are to have your voice in the fight here for truth, and to get that out to the American people. There is another story that plays to what you're talking about. And Ilana, I'd like you to plant the seed on this, and then I'll come back to Dr. Lehman Young again on this. And this is about the Delta variant, and specifically this. There are sources now that are reporting that the Delta variant here, which first appeared in India, we see the reports on that last October, is now wreaking havoc around the world. About 62 other countries have it, actually. But here's the catch. The reports that we hear on this is that it was re-engineered in China to target the Indian population. This is another big explosive piece of the story. Ilana, pick up from there and tell us why we know that, what we know, please, about that.
What occurred, that they engineered this virus, this COVID-19 virus, so that it would target the people of India. Remember that China is fighting a small border war with India and is trying to make incursions into northeastern India. And so they now are trying to presumably take their global war into the subcontinent of India, which is huge. So, but what's happened is that this has spread, as you said, to 62 countries, and including China. And now China has been forced to shut down a number of cities within China, because the virus has backfired on them, if you will, and is now creating a very serious problem for them in a number of cities in southern China. So the seriousness of this is that whatever they tried to do in India escaped again and got to not only other parts of the world, but came back into China to infect the Chinese people. So whatever happened, however they were targeting this virus against the Indian people, they now have a problem where it is traveling around the world again and infecting people other than Indian people, including the Chinese themselves. The thing about the Delta variant is also that it is displaying a host of new after effects, things that we didn't have with the original virus, such things as hearing impairment, severe stomach upsets, and blood clots leading to gangrene. And these weren't typically seen with COVID-19 patients with the original.
What I'm hearing about the Delta variant, the initial reports that I had in from the medical doctors was that it was it wasn't as lethal. The effects of it weren't as bad as the initial COVID because it was a variant. So it wasn't the same as the initial impact of the coronavirus. There are multiple variants that are circling the globe, actually, which is pretty routine and predictable from a virus such as COVID. Now when you're talking about some of these after effects like hearing impairment and gastric problems and blood clots leading to gangrene and things like that, I don't know about the after effects. But the point that this might have been made again and re-engineered in China is really eye-opening. What do we know about this? Or what do you know, Dr. Li Mingyang, that you could share with us, please?
Actually, the Delta variants and the other variants, we always need to do more studies because since there is a chaos in the medical field. So for example, the doctors in India, they cannot do the fully well study about the variants. They only have to do it after their busy work facing to the patients and then collecting data to analyze. So it can be incomplete. But I really think it's worth noticing because first, we see this virus, they can be re-engineered based on the previous strains in the lab. And then we see during this kind of new variants, dominant variants come out, it always shows that at least the modality and also morbidity are not weaker. And so why? So if this is something happened after the normal circulation in the nature among the human, so this should have two possibilities. One side is some virus will become attenuated, become less pathogenic for people. And the other hand, some can be more pathogenic. But now we see the Delta variants, according to Indian doctor and other doctors' report, even become more transmissible and also have some new type of the symptoms. The gangrene and other like the blood or other things may not be lethal, but it definitely affects the patient's life quality very much. So why it happens, and if you think about the origin of the COVID-19 virus, it's from Chinese military lab, and they are used as bioweapon. And definitely the Indian, when it fight with China, when there is a problem, and the China government has warned it in the media, like, then you will see the result, you will be regretful at that time. And then suddenly outbreak happened in India. I don't think there would be a lot of coincidence. But of course, I mean, this takes time for the intelligence people to do more research, right?
Yeah. You know, I get a sense now when I see your reports and every time I speak to you, you always seem to give a sense of urgency. Understanding the gravity of what we're speaking about, I get the sense where you're telling the world there's a sense of urgency here as you're speaking about the CCP and all. It's safe to say at this point, Dr. Li Mengyang, that this unrestricted bio warfare is really the future of warfare, probably moving forward, isn't it?
Yes, I really think this is very urgent from the beginning, because first, based on the nature of this coronavirus, as I said, once it going into the big circulation, there is no way you really efficient to control it, because it's up to the medical condition, up to the policy, up to the culture. So all these things, you cannot control it. And then they will generate numerous mutants, like the variants, always the more dominant and again, the new dominant one. And also, because it's going up, this kind of again and again, waves come out to attack people. You know, even initially, you are very healthy, you are very strong, but because this virus was designed to target multi-symptoms involving your respiratory disease, system, your heart, your brain, your immune system, even now we say reproductive system. So imagine how strong you are can suffer again and again attacks from such virus with different, new developing characters in the variants. So just think about this. And also, according to my knowledge and experience, there is no efficient or magic vaccines can solve this problem, because as we see now, vaccine cannot catch the speed the virus mutant, right?
Yeah.
So altogether, this means once this virus is released and lead to the big pandemic, so we have no idea to control it well. And especially when Chinese Communist Party is still there, when they can still release it to you. Mm-hmm. The only thing is we have to realize this is unrestricted bioweapon from China. And it's like, it's like if your neighbor try to spill the water to your home, and you have to first stop your neighbor to do such things, and then you can consider how to repair your house. Right.
Interesting.
So this is the first thing we have to do. If not, for example, when we grow a little bit older, or our kids grow up, then they become more and more vulnerable to this virus again and again. We cannot guarantee a healthy future in the world. That's terrible.
Wow. All right. A couple other stories I want to get to. Stay right there, Dr. Li Mengyang. And Ilana, I'd like to bring up this next one so listeners are aware. It's quite fascinating. We'll jump over to Israel a moment here. The Biden administration has frozen the funds that were earmarked for the Abraham Fund. This was the Abraham Accords that everybody remembers clearly. That was the massive success that the Trump administration had created with the Middle East and Israel and their Arab neighbors. The fund was set up after those accords were signed in September 2020 by Israel and many of the Arab nations out there. And it was gaining a lot of success that was happening here. Now, these funds have been now earmarked, have been frozen, and there are some effects of this, of what's happening, what projects have been stalled and what have you. Can you speak a quick moment on that, Ilana, please?
Yeah, and this is something, you know, the peace process has been going on since Jimmy Carter, and it has failed every time until Donald Trump. I thought his move was brilliant to move the peace talks away from the ever stalled talks with the Palestinians and move it out into the broader environment of the Muslim countries throughout the Middle East.
And it was brilliant. It was a brilliant move.
It was absolutely brilliant, and it succeeded. It got Israel and the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain sat down with the United States, and they signed this agreement between them that they would normalize relations, and they did it. They normalized them almost immediately, and this fund was set up, and America was supposed to be a major part of funding the new projects that were going to arise from the Abraham Accords. Mm-hmm. And now it seems as though finding peace in the Middle East is at its core highly political and has very little to do with the well-being of the people in the region.
Wow. Boy, isn't that a statement to say, Ilana? You know, let me tell folks as well, those projects were in energy, food technology, financial technology, and so forth. Now, the freezing of the funds, very quickly, Ilana, do we see anything happen where those will be released eventually, or is this, do you feel this is a permanent freeze?
Well, they don't call it permanent, but they say that the fund has been frozen indefinitely,
okay,
in quotes.
Yeah. Right.
And that means probably permanently until there's a new administration.
We bring this all together now. I also want to tell listeners, there was a new guidance report initiatives released from the CDC. I want to make you aware of, and this is quite something. This is about COVID-19 prevention in our school system and in education in kindergarten, K through 12 schools. And I just want to read you a couple of things here. And I actually would like your opinion, Dr. Lee Myung, on the mask wearing for kids. But here's this brand new guidance. This was just released, coming in for the new school year. Here's what they're saying. Students benefit from in-person learning, and safely returning to in-person instruction in the fall 2021 is a priority. Well, we know this. We've been talking about this for some time when the kids were pulled out and everything was being done by Zoom and everything. It goes on to say vaccination is currently the leading public health prevention strategy to end the COVID-19 pandemic. Promoting vaccination can help schools safely return to in-person learning as well as extracurricular activities and sports. Now, in the trials, there was no vaccinations done to children or pregnant women or any of that stuff. And yet they're trying to vaccinate those people now. And that is unheard of. Also, we've never seen the promotion of vaccines are not the answer. You can't put them out there on a brand new virus like that with so many unknowns. And I know Dr. Lee Myung can speak about that. So this idea that vaccines are like a saving grace from heaven is a misconception at the very least of the story. Yeah, but now the CDC says they want all the kids. We're talking little kids, 5, 6, 7-year-olds here, age 2 and older people, to wear masks. They want them to wear masks in the school system. I mean, and they want them to be worn at all times. So you talk about putting the fear into the kids, and there's a whole lot of other things, but I'm outraged with this these guidelines, which, by the way, are not the law. They're not the grand poobah here. This is not the law. These are guidelines. You can take them or stick them, whatever. But the point is, that's what they're putting out there. And of course, a lot of the leftists and the propaganda will put this as the gospel. Let me get a quick word from you, Dr. Lee Myung, on that. Your thoughts?
I mean, this is really hilarious things, and this is not only my idea, this is also the opinion from many, many brave, straightforward doctors in U.S. and scientists in U.S. or Europe. They're all their common opinions. But, you know, this is now controlled by a group of people. And this group of people on the top position in the government, and they can dominate the policy making. So that's why we need to push people to understand what really happened and then feedback to these people, give them pressure and stop such hilarious restrictions. I mean, I can explain for one day or over to tell you the problem happened in those guidance you mentioned. But let's be more briefly, is Chinese government know how to make pills because they know always numerous opportunities will be generated automatically from the pills. And definitely, when they release the virus and make the pandemic, the world is in the chaos. And then, as they know, that later, a lot of people, a lot of industries, they seize opportunities from the chaos. That's why they keep pushing the normal experimental vaccines, and they keep pushing their mask policies without the scientific data supporting, and then they shut down all the business or school, and then they open it. All these things, they have no logic, but they know they are pursuing their personal benefits. We must do action to stop it. Whatever that action can work, we must try it, because if not, this is terrible.
Yeah, that's exactly it. The power is with we the people. I continue to remind you out there, that is where the power is, which is really what Dr. Li Mengyang is suggesting right there. The sense of urgency and the sense to do something about this has to come back to the people to rise. Now, listen, there's a lot to the story we just talked about in those CDC guidelines, which are ridiculous at best, in this promoting and pushing of vaccines that are backfiring on so many, and that continue to be pushed as propaganda out there, is the art of all of this. It is fear-based. So listen, and I'll tell you one other thing, people. The difference between, the difference between CCP and the buffoons in Washington, D.C., I sometimes have a hard time delineating between the two. Now, I know that's a big statement to make, but I make it anyways, okay? Because when you really look at these kinds of stories and you see what's happening, you then have to really question what the motives are. What are they really after exactly? And it's a concern, should be a concern for everybody. Listen, this is most important. And this show we just did right now, this program needs to get out there from sea to sea, the vital information we just talked about on Viewpoint this Sunday. This show goes to podcast networks Sunday afternoon, as always, after 3 p.m. Eastern. You'll have it on all podcast networks and on the front page of AmericaOutloud.com. Listen, we have a lot of experts and MDs, Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. Lee for America, Dr. Stephen LaTulip. We have a lot of medical expertise back at America Out Loud. We have a lot of intelligence expertise and military expertise and law enforcement. It's all back there, my friends, at AmericaOutloud.com. We're on the front lines to right the wrongs and put justice where injustice is. In fact, it is liberty and justice for all. Visit us back there at AmericaOutloud.com and get the word out there so we can reshape policy and push the rights, the justice, where they should be. Thank you again to everyone on the show here. Del Wilbur, our former CIA Department of Defense Intelligence Analyst up front in the program. Ilana Friedman, right here, you've been listening to throughout the program. And our very dear Dr. Li Mengyang. I thank them each for being part of the broadcast here. We'll see you back there at America Out Loud. And thank you, as always, for being on the mission. It's time to get involved and get loud.